What's good?
Welcome back to Co-Signed. If you're new here, I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Sam. We're your hosts of this very real, raw, and hilarious podcast.
You're gonna love it.
So go ahead.
Grab your snacks, your coffee, your wine.
Whatever your vice is.
And let's get into it.
All right. Welcome back. Murder Mystery. Episode 3.
Ooh, she's a poet. Didn't even know it.
Oh, God. It's like my mom's favorite saying. All right, guys. So we are back with episode 3
of our true crime series.
Yes, yes. So just to start, I'm going to do the trigger warning that we always give, but we're also going to go through list 5 documentaries / docuseries that we recommend. Even though this week we picked 5 we have not seen ourselves. Nope.
Never ever.
Just some that are on our list, so we're going to list those, and then Mackenzie's going to give you some cool facts. So, trigger warning. Several of these shows and documentaries discuss highly sensitive topics, including murder, sexual assault, animal abuse, violence, and more. Some were distressing for us to watch. Viewer discretion is advised.
Although we haven't seen these yet, like we just said, these are all on Netflix.
Yes.
So, 1 through 5. Number 1, Trial by Media. Number 2, Murder to Mercy, the Centoya Brown story. Which, I do know about Centoya Brown, I just have not seen this specific docuseries or documentary. Number 3, Don't Fuck with Cats, Hunting an Internet Killer. Number 4, Captive. And number 5, Long Shot.
I'm a little hesitant about Don't Fuck with Cats. Very right. Viewer discretion with that one.
Especially if you're an animal lover.
Yes.
Because we've heard it shows everything they did to these animals. So, all right, for my interesting facts, I missed it last week. I was unprepared with the cool facts. So this week I have 2. And they're all related to serial killers and goes along with our series. So, number 1, the first interesting fact, memories are so easily manipulated that in 3 hours you can be convinced that you committed a crime that never happened. Researchers did a study to understand more about why people have gone to jail for false confessions, and they were able to convince 70% of participants that they were guilty of a fake crime. The college-age participants not only confessed, but they also described very detailed experiences that actually never occurred.
That's so crazy.
So,
I mean, false imprisonment, people who go to jail for stuff they didn't do.
We were talking about the Stephen Avery case, either last episode or the very first one. And depending on what side you believe, you know, if you believe the Dateline side or if you believe the making a murderer side, very easy to believe that he was coerced or both of them. Not only was Stephen Avery framed, but I believe his nephew was coerced into confessing.
Definitely.
Interesting fact numero dos. These are 4 motives of a serial killer that if you did not know, which I didn't know some of these. Number 1, visionary. Someone who feels compelled by entities such as God or the devil to murder. Number 2, mission-oriented, to rid the world of certain types of people, such as prostitutes or sex workers, or to cure societal illnesses in their mind that they believe people are evil or people are diseased, or if they don't believe the way they do, they have to go. Number 3, hedonistic, I believe that's how you say it, someone who derives pleasure just from killing, just gets off on it. And number 4, power or control hungry. Just the need to just have power over someone. So, those are your interesting facts.
Woo woo.
For the week. All right, before Sam jumps into her story, I'm going to give another trigger warning. This story is for mature audiences only. It contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes and adult dialogue. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, so I've been digging into the famous cases. So this week I decided to do Jack the Ripper, which I almost did last week, but went with the Zodiac instead because I was a little more recent and I was really interested in that case. But a lot I didn't know about Jack the Ripper. And what's crazy is I didn't realize how long ago this actually happened. So if you don't know who Jack the Ripper is, most people have at least heard of him once. He was a murderer of at least 5 women, all who were prostitutes in or near the Whitechapel district of London's East End. The murders happened 130 years ago, between August 1888 and November 1888, so about a 3-month span. He was mutilating their bodies in an unusual manner, which indicated that the killer had a substantial knowledge of human anatomy. The case is one of the most famous unsolved mysteries of English crime ever. So, more than a dozen murders between 1888 and 1892 have been linked to Jack the Ripper, but only 5 were, like, proven. The first one was Mary Ann Nichols. She was found August 31st. Annie Chapman was found September 8th. Elizabeth Stride was found September 30th. Catherine Edals was found September 30th as well, because he killed 2 women that day. And Mary Jane Kelly was the last known confirmed. She was killed November 9th.
Wow.
So he went
back to back.
Yeah, they were all back to back. All 5 of his victims were killed within 1 mile of each other. And 4 out of the 5, 4 were killed in the street. The last one, Mary Jane Kelly, which I actually found out this on Criminal Minds when they were talking about the case. The last one, he actually killed her, I believe they said, in a hotel room. And it was like the most gruesome kill that he had, like, done. He had basically butchered her body. Annie, Elizabeth, and Catherine were murdered all in September, while Mary's body was discovered in November. All the women received cuts to the throat, and all of them except for Elizabeth were also severely mutilated. Investigators believe that the murderer was interrupted during the attack on Elizabeth. Otherwise, she too would have been mutilated as well. We also know that the murders of Elizabeth and Catherine were part of a double homicide. This is the one that happened in the same day within hours of each other. So the two were killed within hours of each other and in close proximity to each other. The fact that Elizabeth's body was not mutilated suggests that the Ripper had not planned to kill Catherine, but needed to get his fix after being interrupted in his killing of Elizabeth.
So someone, which happens.
Yeah.
Especially if you've ever watched Criminal Minds, it shows patterns like that.
And that's exactly what Ted Bundy did when he got interrupted, was go,
they have to release that urge.
Yeah. So you have to think, this happened in 1888.
Right.
Before technology, before all the things that we can do now with forensics. So they really didn't have a lot to go on, because really the only people who can give you anything are dead.
Right.
You know? So it says many descriptions are conflicting that were collected about the Ripper, but it is generally accepted that he was a man. He was described as having a long dark coat and a brown deerstalker cap by one witness, while another described him as wearing a long fur trim coat. But I'm wondering who these witnesses are, because he killed people at nighttime in alleys, and you have enough time to sit there and cut them up. So who's around?
And I feel like if he were to know, if a witness is seeing him do this and he were to notice them, then they would be dead too.
Right.
So who are you?
Yeah.
And why did...
So I don't know where those descriptions came from. That was the only thing that they had on the description of him.
Just a coat.
A man in a coat. So
in the 18th century or 19th century in England, so that's like everybody.
Right.
Okay. To clear that up, just to clarify.
So like every other one that I've pretty much done, he wrote letters. A number of letters were allegedly sent by the killer to the London Metropolitan Police Service, which they call the Scotland Yard there, taunting officers about his gruesome activities and speculating on murders to come. The name Jack the Ripper originates from a letter published at the time of the attacks. Hundreds of letters were sent to the police and newspapers at the time claiming to be Jack the Ripper, and the identities of the authors are also not known. Although many were dismissed as hoaxes, one letter gained attention when the author claimed to intend to cut the ear off of his next victim, and Catherine was found 3 days later with a missing ear. Another letter was accompanied by a box containing half of a human kidney, which they believe belonged to Catherine as well.
Mm.
Yum. The authorities also received a series of taunting notes from a person calling himself Jack the Ripper and reporting to be the murderer. Strenuous efforts were made to identify and trap the killer, all to no avail. A great public uproar over the failure to arrest the murderer was raised against Home Secretary and London Police Commissioner, who ended up resigning after all that happened.
All that pressure.
So the suspects, like I said, they didn't have a lot to go on. A man with a coat in the dark.
Yeah, 25 men with coats to go through.
So investigators have come up, or had come up, with over 100 possible suspects. 100, right.
Over 100.
Taking into account that the murderer might have worked as a butcher or in a slaughterhouse if he didn't have advanced medical knowledge. Investigators at the time also believed that the murderer lived in the Whitechapel area. They detained 80 people, but were not able to charge a single one.
Oh my God. Useless.
Right. It is generally accepted that there was only a single killer, but it also remains uncertain whether he had any accomplices. Along with the identity of the murderer, investigators still don't know the motive behind the killings, as well as why they eventually just stopped. Some theorize this is due to death, imprisonment, or if the suspect was put in an institution of some sort. Although five victims are attributed to the Ripper, investigators don't know for certain that there were no others, because there was really no way for them to track if he left back then. So I looked up some interesting random facts about it that most people wouldn't know, so I have some pretty cool ones. So if you've watched any serial killer documentary ever, you'll know that sometimes murderers like to take home trophies from their crimes.
Mm-hmm.
The Ripper wasn't known for stealing from the women he killed, but he may have with Annie Chapman. According to Historic UK, after Annie had been killed and mutilated, parts of her insides had been carved out and taken away. Although her belongings and all her body parts were found with her corpse, part of the bladder and other organs were completely missing. So he wouldn't even rob them.
I'm going to take your bladder.
Yuck.
Yay. That's like the Cleveland Torso Killer. We're the heads.
Right.
You're just taking all my heads?
Oh, my God.
Weirdos.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's very, very.
And that was the only victim.
Yeah.
That he took anything from.
Yep.
I would say he did rob them.
Well, they think that that kidney was from another one, but they couldn't prove it. Which I don't.
How like, not?
Did she have it or not?
Right. DNA.
I don't know.
Blood testing.
So, they never said anything about that.
I guess that's not a thing
that,
back then.
Just 1800s.
Kind of measured the size. What about her other kidney?
Right.
You can't measure it? Did she have two or no? Oh, God.
That's that's how I felt about it. But
what do you mean?
Who are we?
Oh, God.
So, this is actually pretty crazy. The crimes committed by Jack the Ripper left the citizens of London in a state of panic, obviously, because this type of thing did not happen back then. This was especially true in Whitechapel. After the name Jack the Ripper was published in the local newspapers, people who lived in the area started spreading theories and rumors about the killer, of course. It was widely believed that whoever was responsible carried knives in a black bag. So the locals, driven by fear, began rioting and attacking anyone who was caught carrying a black bag.
Oh, God. Throw out all your black bags, people.
Right.
My goodness. That seems logical.
Right.
I mean, just all anybody.
All black bags.
All black bags.
The most standard of things. So number three, the murder of Catherine brought with it a clue that may have shed light on the identity of Jack the Ripper. Near her body, police found her bloodstained apron in the doorway of an apartment block. Above the apron was a message written in chalk. Okay, before I say this, I'm going to explain this word at the end of this. It says, what was written, the Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing. That's okay. Exactly how it, but it's not Jews, J-E-W-S. It's Jews, J-U-W-E-S. Completely different thing, and I'll explain what it is in a second. Wanting to avoid racial tensions, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Charles Warren, ordered the message to be erased rather than photographing it and considering it as evidence.
Oh.
Yeah, so they just
erased
it.
Also very logical.
Right.
That's like with the bones. Just bury them.
You know?
Just bury them in the sand. You didn't see them.
So this went against the wishes of the entire city of London Police, who felt that the message was an important clue, but the police commissioner overrode it and had them erase it at the scene. So
you literally could have...
Who knows what could have happened?
You could have matched, made everybody that you detained write this message and match handwriting.
Right.
Anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just erase it.
Just never happened.
You know? You're just butchering women.
Yeah.
In alleys, but... So the thing I was talking about, I was confused... The Jews. That's how it's pronounced, but like I said, it's J-U-W-E-S.
Like Jewess.
So they had said, at first they thought he, like, couldn't spell. Which,
it's very possible.
I don't think that that's what it was.
Oh.
But, so the actual meaning of that word Jews, the way that that one is written, it is a masonry thing. So, in the ritual of Master Mason, Hiram Abiff was slain by three ruffians collectively termed the Jews, J-U-W-E-S. According to C.C. Zane, these three represent the midheaven, the ascendant, and the descendant position of the sun.
Interesting.
So, I don't really understand.
So, tell me what it said again. The Jews are the men that...
will not be blamed for nothing.
I don't understand the reference between killing women and then that message.
Me either.
Okay.
Me either.
So we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when I saw because I actually looked, like, at how it was spelled out, because someone at the scene had, like, rewritten it.
Yeah.
Like, the way it looked. And I was just like, what is that? So that's why I ended up doing a little further research to see if there was any significance there. But there's a whole blog about that word. You can read more if you want to Google it.
Google. Hey, Siri.
So, fourth fun fact. These get better and better as they go down. There are endless rumors surrounding the case of Jack the Ripper, of course. So, one was that he wasn't just a lone serial killer, but part of a gang.
Hmm.
A newspaper at the time published a story detailing a woman's experience... summoning the ghost of one of the Ripper's victims, Elizabeth Stride. According to the story, the ghost of Elizabeth revealed that the killer was a middle-aged man who belonged to a gang of 12. There were other victims around the same time who were attacked by gangs of men, but police never officially linked those cases to the five victims of the Ripper. I don't think
y'all gonna stop messing with these Ouija boards, okay?
Right.
That's y'all giving police false evidence.
And that type of crime...
summoning spirits. Y'all don't know what's coming through there.
Exactly.
You don't have a clue.
And that type of crime is just so personal.
Right.
I can't see that being more than one person.
Because I feel like it would be so, like, really messy.
Yeah.
Because Elizabeth was not... Was she... That wasn't the last one.
No.
Right. So, the last one was the most gruesome.
Yeah.
So, that you can kind of see, well, maybe it was... more than one. Still don't think it was.
I don't either.
But to go from one person to 12 or a gang of 12.
And you wouldn't. They said the cuts and the mutilation was precise, like a medical knowledge. There's no way 12 people
all have
doing that.
Yeah, right.
I just don't believe that theory at
all.
Plus,
a lot of serial killers don't want to share.
Right.
Their path, like that experience with other people.
Right.
Like, a lot of them don't, so.
So, number five, and this one is Looney Tune. Okay. More than one psychic medium weighed in at the time. A notable incident was when a psychic medium living in New York City sent a telegram to the police in London advising them to watch the house at 20 Wirt Street in London. The psychic, known as Mr. B., also gave a name to the police. He identified the Ripper as one Thomas Totson. Unfortunately, the address did not even exist, and police were unable to follow through with any of the suggestions he gave.
It didn't exist at all in London? Address has got to be somewhere.
I don't know.
I mean, other than his head.
What? I don't know.
Just pulling through numbers and words. Just right. Oh,
Thomas Totson.
Street. Drive. Lane. Two. Whatever. Gah.
So, I don't even know. And to go out of
your way.
So,
really, they had nothing to go off of.
Think about going out of your way to mail a telegram to London.
Just, you might as well send a carrier pigeon.
Right.
Travel across the Atlantic. Or whichever way you're going to get to London.
Okay, so
that
yeah, it's a little
poor police,
a little over the top, you know. And I was even thinking, I wonder how many crimes would actually get solved if they weren't wasting and following fake
or erasing evidence,
right?
I mean, that's like, oh, here's the message on the wall. The writing's on the wall. The message on the wall, the bloody apron, it's like, oh, just erase this and just throw this in the trash. Right. This never happened. You never saw it. Don't speak of it again.
Yeah.
That's, I didn't know that, well, I mean, I'm sure it's nothing's changed now. Right. I'm sure that's still happening.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, finally, the coolest thing of all, the final theory.
Mm-hmm.
It's been more than a century, and we still don't know the true identity of Jack the Ripper. But thanks to new genetic testing, some forensic scientists believe that they have finally uncovered the mystery. After examining a stained silk shawl that was found, it was found beside Catherine. Investigators found DNA that pointed to a 23-year-old Polish immigrant named Aaron Kosminski. He was a barber with access to knives and was a prime suspect that the police talked to at the time. Science magazine points out that critics of this theory argue that the shawl could have been contaminated over time, and these findings don't necessarily mean that the case is closed. He was one of their prime suspects, and they found the DNA. But
a thousand million years later.
Later.
So, well, hey, he's dead.
Right. So, that is the story.
Oh. There's a lot of books and a lot of things, like a lot of books based off Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm.
A lot of movies
and TV series.
Tons of theories, a lot of blogs. I mean, it's one of the most famous serial killer cases. And that, really, I can't think of a more famous serial killer any earlier of a time than that.
It makes me think of, I know you haven't seen Vampire Diaries, but there's a part where they use certain vampires and they call them rippers, but there's a vampire that is English and he goes, Ripper. Oh, Jack.
You in that show. Oh, but before I end, we always bring up Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
So I had told Mackenzie it's funny because I was getting my information together and the episode based on Jack the Ripper actually came on. So if you watch Criminal Minds, it is the episode about a woman in New Orleans and she was assaulted and she's basically getting her revenge. So they switch the story. It's a woman going after men in the episode. But she adopts the persona of Jack the Ripper and copies his murders on men. So.
Yes, girl.
Yes. Slice and dice.
Jackie the Ripper.
So that is my Criminal Minds reference for Jack the Ripper.
I love it. Well, since we're talking about female serial killers, it's only right. This week, I am not coming to you guys with an unsolved case. This is very much a solved one, but it's about a female serial killer. Her name is Julia Tofana. She's technically classified as a makeup murderer. So, the most successful serial killer you've probably never heard of. She's killed hundreds of men in the 17th century in Italy after turning her makeup business into a poison factory. Julia was selling a product called Acqua Tofana, named after herself, which was thought to have been laced with arsenic, lead, and belladonna.
Dang.
Which, if you're like me and didn't know what belladonna was, the belladonna berry juice was used historically in Italy around this time. Women would use like a drop in their eyes to dilate their pupils and it would give their eyes like a very luminous appearance.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Let's just put poison in our eyes.
Right.
Lead and arsenic were common ingredients for facial powders during this time and it would lighten their skin.
Yeah.
This was during the Renaissance, so when no one knew any better. I mean, they thought dilated pupils were attractive. So, I mean, if you see someone with dilated pupils now, you're like, you good? You know, like, you're like, stay away from me.
Right.
You know, but again, this was during the Renaissance, so arranged marriages were very much a thing. Women were often forced into marriages without any say at all, and once married, the men had complete control over them. These women were left completely powerless. Husbands would often beat their wives and never face any type of consequence. Even the most aristocratic of daughters, I read, were often auctioned off, like, to men, like, high-ranking people in the community. They just... their daughters and stuff off to the highest bidder.
I'm so like they were that we don't live in that time.
Right. Like they were an accessory. So considering all of this, divorce was definitely like you did not divorce back then. So all they could do is really just sit there and be pretty and be a wife in a loveless arrangement.
Yeah.
Essentially. So what do you do when you're in this horrible, abusive, loveless marriage that you literally can't get out of? Maybe you call Julia Tofana. Okay, so who is Julia Tofana? One of history's most prolific serial killers still remains a mystery. There aren't any portraits or paintings of her at all. No, like, pictures. Any information about her is very sparse. There is an image going around of, like, a woman holding, like, a unicorn thing that people were, like, trying to say it was her. It was proven that it was not her. So there are no surviving portraits, I'll say that. And she was possibly the daughter of a woman named Theofana D'Adamo. I think I'm saying that right. But that woman was executed in July of 1633. But she was murdered or executed because she murdered her husband.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Fitting.
Like mother, like daughter.
Yeah. Now, Julia was described as being very beautiful, and she spent most of her time with apothecaries, who are people who sold medicines and or drugs, make them also. So she apparently enjoyed learning about these medicines and drugs, and she made her own concoctions, if you will, and she was pretty good at it. Some say Julia learned to make her own poison from these apothecaries, and then some say she learned how to make it from her mother. Regardless, and clear, harmless liquid, 4 to 6 drops were sufficient to destroy any man. This product appeared to be a typical women's cosmetic product or even a religious healing oil that no one would dare suspect as a deadly poison. Julia began to sell this poison, and she first disguised her poison as a powdered makeup, and women could set it on their counters, vanities, or nightstands without anyone wondering, like, what is that? Her second disguise was even more ingenious, and it was in a small vial claiming to be manna of St. Nicholas of Bari, a special healing oil or ointment, and it looked like a devotional object, like any women who would carry this. Oh, well, she's just really devoted to her faith.
Yeah.
She's carrying healing oil or whatever. And you've probably asked yourself, as like I did, why is she doing this in the first place, right? Julia was sympathetic toward low-status women. Most often, she sold her poison to women trapped in difficult and abusive marriages. She quickly became a friend to all of the ladies, and her product, Aqua Tofana, provided a discreet solution to their problems. Now, to be fair, she did sell some of her products to men, too, but it was majority women. They would buy it from Julia and give it to their husbands. This product is almost impossible to detect, and it was a slow action poison that had two key benefits. Number one, the symptoms that it presented in the victim's body were very similar to like an advancing virus or like a disease, like the flu. Like it came on quick, but like was slow to present itself, like react. Number two, it would make the death look like it was from natural causes. And because it killed slowly, most of the men would put their affairs in order and maybe even make a will.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
For their wives. Now, around this time, a lot of people were deeply religious. So because this was a slow working poison, the men would repent their sins, and many believed this would guarantee their entry into heaven. I guess this made the women feel better. Plus they're getting a will, you know, so I'm sure that didn't hurt either. Now, apart from those two key benefits, Aqua Tofana was also colorless, tasteless, and she made it into a liquid instead of a powder, making it easier for women to mix it into food or drinks during meals. Now, the symptoms would actually go unnoticed. The first small dosage was said to produce cold-like symptoms. By the third dose, the victim would feel very ill, be throwing up, dehydration, diarrhea, and having a burning sensation in their like stomach. By the fourth dose, they'd be dead.
Dang.
So
quick with it.
Right. Some women would add just small drops, you know, one drop a day at a time, and some women just did, you're dead, like all at once. So I guess it was just up to the woman. But women in Italy at the time only had like three ways to make a living. They either got married, they begged on the street, or they prostituted themselves. Love that for
Love
women.
Those
just like
for women.
Just the best, right? Women would often die in childbirth due to complications back in this time. Even the wealthiest of families would not take care of their women. Again, most of them were mistreated and powerless, and a lot of them straight up hated their husbands. And rightfully so, some of them were scared of childbirth because they literally could die.
Yeah.
So I guess they thought it's better to be a widow than them dying. And plus, who wants to have a child with someone who's beating them?
Right.
They can't stand even look at them. Let's weigh our options. I'm not saying murder is the answer, though. So, back to Julia. Her clients were very protective of her, and they would only recommend her if they knew that this, like, whoever they're recommending her to could be trusted. It was all by word of mouth, and obviously, if the authorities were to ever found out what she was selling, she would be murdered along with her client list. So, in order to sell this product, Acqua Tofana, she needed a front. So she basically started her own beauty or cosmetic business. And some women actually did come just for the cosmetics. Like, she did have actual cosmetics.
Yeah.
But most of her clientele was interested in the poison. And this seemed to work because she did this for almost 50 years.
Oh my god.
50.
How many victims?
I'll tell you.
I'm so excited.
Okay, so Julia and her daughter ended up moving to Naples. Her daughter also helped make Acqua Tofana and
keep it in the family.
Right. But her and her daughter ended up moving to Naples and then to Rome, where she continued the family business. There was a journal written about this time, and in this journal they said the product would be ingested through wine or tea. The husband would feel weak and would call a medical man, a doctor, and after the second dose, the weakness became more pronounced. The wife would express anxiety and stress over her husband's quickly growing illness, which Julia coached them on.
Mm.
And rarely would she ever be under suspicion because of how she was acting. Julia and her daughter, again, like I said, would coach the women on how to act, how to administer the poison into the food or drink. When the doctor would come over, he would think that the husband just had a very simple illness, give them medicine to help make him feel better, but the husband would only get worse. The doctors would be so confused and would be giving the victims even more medicine, but the next thing you know, they're dead, and Julia would make sure to tell her clients what to do after the passing of their spouse, basically telling them to put on a show, most importantly, demanding a post-mortem exam, aka an autopsy, which would result to nothing because nothing was traceable. And then because the new widow was requesting this, almost 100% of the time, she was seen as innocent and no one would blame her. Very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Julia also made sure that all of her clients followed through with this. That way, none of them would ever be a suspect. Again, this was during the Renaissance period, and they couldn't really trace arsenic or any of her ingredients in the body yet at this time. So she's got it all covered. Like I previously said, Julia's clients were very protective of her, and she was pretty selective in who she sold it to as well. So I can recommend her all day long, but she's going to do her own due diligence, right? So she made sure that any new clients were vouched for, essentially doing like a background check, if you will. Like, let's say you referred me to her, and then I go to her. She's going to be like, well, who referred you? And then she's going to go, and if I say Sam, she's going to go to Sam, and then she's going to be like, let me know what this person, like, I need to know. Like, is this person legit? Like, she did her homework. Once she moved to Rome, she did do a bit of rebranding. She started including directions on how to use it. This was basically to cover her behind. It would say something along the lines of 1 to 2 drops on the face at night to make it look more like a beauty product, essentially. And because it had belladonna in it, which was used in most of cosmetics at the time, it would further prove to actually being a cosmetic product if the wives ever left it out and the husbands were to see it. Unfortunately, though, good things cannot last forever. In the 1650s, it all came crashing down over a bowl of soup. Like, literally a bowl of soup. A lady went to visit Julia. She was new, and as Julia always did, she did a background check on this woman. She made sure she was legit. Everything checked out. So this woman bought this product for her husband because she wanted out of her marriage. As she's preparing her husband's dinner, they're having a nice warm bowl of soup. The woman takes two drops of Acqua Tofana, puts it into her husband's bowl, calls him over to the table. He apparently demands for some wine as well, and as she's getting it, she looks over and sees her husband about to take a spoonful of the soup. She's immediately filled with regret and tells him to stop. She feels guilty, and because she's now telling him to stop eating, and women back in this time, you don't tell your husband to do anything.
Right.
He obviously gets upset. He literally starts beating her, torturing her, holds her down, like, what's in the soup? You know? So it says. And she ends up telling him that it's essentially poison. He drags her down to the authorities in Rome, where they hook her up to some sort of torture device.
Oh my God.
And get out any information that she had. He should have just let him eat it.
Right.
At least just one, and then he would have just gotten sick, be done with it. But it's a little unclear if she was killed or not. I'm going to say, go out on a limb and say that she was.
She probably was.
But she confesses to everything, and word got back to Julia about it, and she was warned, like, girl, make a run for it. Like, they know everything. Get out of Rome. Julia's freaking out because she knows her fate. Like, she's gonna die if she gets caught. So she starts packing her stuff and she goes looking for somewhere to stay. She ends up at a church and she asks them for sanctuary. They grant it to her. Mm-hmm. Her plan was to stay there until she could escape. So she's laying low at this church. Rumors are spreading fast. It's just like a big game of telephone. And somehow, rumor turned into Julia poisoning the whole entire water supply of Rome, even though she did not. Of course, these people are livid, and now they want her all dead. They want her dead. So word also got out that she was hiding at a church. They end up finding her at this church. A lot of people, essentially a mob, storm into the church demanding that they hand over Julia, or they're going to burn the place down. Unfortunately, the church was like, sorry, boo.
Well,
you gotta go.
Yeah.
You know? So they handed her over to the authorities, and they, quote, brought her in for questioning, which means they just tortured her. She ends up confessing to what she had been doing and estimated killing over 600 men.
Oh, my.
Right. Authorities also tortured her into naming some of her clients, but she could not remember them all. And I know I just kind of casually went over 600 men, but that's a lot of men.
That's a lot. So she's basically the most successful killer of all time.
Essentially. But they don't even really know if that's like the real number. It could be less. It could be more.
Yeah.
Now, this story is said to be true because there are a lot of journals written about it from this era. But like I said in the beginning, there are no paintings or portraits, like surviving paintings or portraits of her. So essentially, she's a myth, but it actually really happened. So in July of 1659, she was executed along with her daughter and three of her employees. They were executed in Campo dei Fiori, which is a town square, meaning field of flowers. It became a very popular location during this time period to hang and burn people at the stake.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, I know. Sadly, though, Julia's body was thrown over the same wall of the church that had given her sanctuary as a big, like, F you to that church. Yeah, isn't that sad?
Wow.
After her confession, some of her clients did get punished also, but some of them tried to play dumb, like, oh, I had no idea, like, what it was used for. It's a cosmetic product. What do you mean? Now, some of them were executed completely outright, and some of them were bricked into the dungeons of the Palace of Holy Office. I'm not sure what that is, but they were, like, bricked into there, and they just died. Yeah.
I'm so claustrophobic. Like, yeah. That is like my nightmare.
Brick them into the wall, basically.
Oh, my God.
Now, it's also possible that Julia exaggerated the number of men since she was being tortured at the time of her confession. Maybe she was just trying to say, like, what she thought the authorities wanted to hear just to make them stop. But some believe that she's completely innocent, that she was just a woman dabbling in cosmetics at the time, and there was a major witch hunt sweeping through Europe, and women doing, like, anything except staying at home and being a wife was suspicious. So the fact that she had her own business, that was just, like, enough to send them over the edge.
Yeah.
And women were being killed for literally anything and everything. But long after Julia's death, the legend of Acqua Tofana continued. In 1791, the composer Mozart, have you heard of him?
Of course.
Fell seriously ill. He was completely convinced that he was poisoned. And days before his death, he said, I quote, I will not last much longer. I am sure that I have been poisoned. I cannot rid myself of the idea that someone has given me Acqua Tofana. End quote. So historians believe that he died of other things, so it could be a bit of a stretch. But his paranoia, shared by many others during this time period, is just testimony of the continued horror that she inspired of, even like hundreds of years later. But yeah, that is the story of Julia Tofana and her deadly concoction.
I wish I could see what she looked like.
I know. When you look up her, they have like random like portraits, but it's not... It's not her. They just have, and then they have like little vials of what they think that it might have would have looked like. But it's just really, really interesting. Because I mean, I don't, murder is just like not the answer, right? But I kind of like don't know if she's the bad guy because she's essentially helping women out of abusive relationships. Is that like wrong for me to say?
I don't think so. I mean, what else would women do with that?
That's
time?
What I'm saying.
You
like they
do
were
anything else.
They were gonna die anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were being beaten and abused the way that women during these time periods were, I mean, you literally couldn't even breathe. If you breathed incorrectly, your husband could literally just like.
Right.
So, I don't know. Y'all let me know what you think.
Sounds
because
like a bad bitch to me.
Right. Right. Makeup murderer. Julia Acqua Tofana.
No, why is no one talking about
it? It sounds like a perfume. You know, like when they're like Acqua de Julia. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, deal.
Deal.
You know? I don't know. Acqua Tofana.
No, I love that one.
Let me know if you think she was the bad guy, if you think that she deserved to be executed, if you think that she was innocent. Let me know.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's
I was
really,
like, oh.
Yeah, that's a really interesting case. I love it.
Woo! Thanks for hanging out with us, guys, on this Tuesday. Tuesday. Can you believe April's basically almost, I mean, it's the middle of April.
So, Julia and Jack is who we
covered
today.
Julia, it's Julia with a G, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm. No, super interesting cases. I mean, I didn't realize how long ago Jack the Ripper was actually active.
Right, we had some, we both had cases that were...
Old.
Really old.
Yeah.
If you guys, if you like, if you're interested in these cases or other cases that we should cover, let us know.
Yeah, because now I'm interested in going back a little further. Over 600 people. I can't get over it.
She estimated.
Wow.
Like, herself.
God.
Imagine. I mean, that's just people coming in left and right.
I wonder how much she was charging for that.
I know.
I bet you she was making bank.
Had to be.
You know what I mean? Hmm.
Small business, side hustle.
I'm telling you. I'm curious to know what a Julia hit costs.
Right. Yeah.
No, but...
Snaps for Julia. You got your hustle, girl. She got her bag.
This one was fun.
It was.
This one was fun. So like she said, if you have any suggestions, please hit us up because I love looking into stuff
Me
like
too.
This.
DM us on Instagram, co.signpodcast. If you go into the link in our bio on Instagram, you'll see voice messages where you can record and be featured on the next episode or a future episode. You can also, with that link, listen to us on your favorite platforms.
Woo.
Yeah. So go follow us. Go follow us, co.signpodcast. We're also going to be doing a giveaway very soon. Followers are growing, so you don't want to miss out on when we do it.
Growing. But what do we say every week?
Every
single
Tuesday. We need to learn how to say that in a different language.
Hey, that would be fun. Do a new language every week.
Yeah. Every single Tuesday, y'all. We will see you
next week.
Next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.